Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Big things poppin', and little things stoppin'. Big things poppin', and little things stoppin'. Big things poppin', and little things stoppin'. Ball on these suckers, shout it, little things not an option. Now do it, do it, do it, what you waiting for? Do it, do it, do it, what you waiting for?
Me, myself, and T.I. on the Southern rapper's latest, he battles against himself. Who wins? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Still to come on our show, we undress the full Monteverdi, a classical concert disguised as a restaurant. And later, we look at this weekend's Siren Music Festival. But first, donning costumes is nothing new in music. Bowie famously transformed himself into Ziggy Stardust, for example, in 1972. But more and more artists are developing what seems to be a mild form of split personality disorder. T.I.'s new album is entitled T.I. vs. T.I.P. And on Tori Amos's latest, she sings as five different characters, each with a unique name, look, and even blog. Why are so many artists splintering these days, and how does it affect their music? We're joined first by Kelly Fasane, pop music critic for The New York Times. His review of T.I.'s new album was entitled, In Rap, Inner War Can Be a Trap. Kelly, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks.
So T.I. versus T.I.P., it's described as a kind of musical fight club. You've got the pinstriped rapper versus the sweat-shirted younger version of the rapper. Why?
Well, this is something that T.I. actually did on one of his earliest albums. He had a track called T.I. versus T.I.P., which was all about this process of fame. And to a certain extent, being that young, volatile guy helps you get ahead in the hip-hop world. On the other hand, getting ahead in the hip-hop world means making deals and starring in movies and making nice with executives. And so there was this sort of tension, and he explored this in an early track called T.I. versus T.I.P. And I think as his career got bigger and bigger, King, his album last year, was actually the biggest-selling rap album last year. So I think this tension kind of came to a head is one explanation for it, and he decided to explore it in an album. It was his way of acknowledging that he'd starred in this movie, ATL, which is like a love story set in a roller rink. And at the same time, you know, he's making these albums that are partly about kind of life on the streets, drug dealing, etc. And, you know, in a sense, maybe he's trying to beat people to the punch by saying, yeah, there is a conflict here.
So the tension in his own professional and, I guess, personal life coming out in the music in the form of these two personae, I guess, that he adopts, does it work?
It doesn't quite work. This album's actually a lot less exciting, I thought, than King and the ones that came before. You know, what he did on this album is he kind of separated out. For most of the album, the personas are separate. Act one is, I believe, T.I.P.'s part of the album. Act two is T.I.'s part. And then act three, there's a couple songs where they sort of meet and he tries to figure it all out. But as you can imagine, it's actually much more fun to listen to him when it's a little more unpredictable. And you're getting bits of this ambitious hip-hop tycoon mixed with bits of this streetwise kid from Bankhead. And you can't really tell where one stops and the other starts. I think by separating them, he actually makes each one sound a little less exciting.
Well, it's a tricky business playing with musical alter egos. And, I mean, there's a lot of good examples of it. The Beatles with Sgt. Pepper, you know, just being at a point where they needed to create some other forum for what they wanted to say, so the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club
and
Band.
In a sense, I think sometimes what happens is that when people get pretty good at what they're doing, they need to find a way to make it more difficult, give themselves a challenge, give themselves a reason to write songs, almost to keep themselves sharp.
All right, now another example, Garth Brooks, at the pinnacle of country music, and then suddenly decides in 1999, I want to be a rocker. I'm going to be Chris Gaines.
A name that shall live in infamy. Yeah, it did not work out well for Garth Brooks. But I think it's a similar thing. I think one of Garth Brooks' big innovations in country music was the ways in which he smuggled bits of arena rock, both the sound and the presentation, into country music. And so it was kind of country and a little bit of rock kind of all mixed up. And when he tried to separate it out and say, oh, now I'm going to be the brooding rocker, it just didn't really make as much sense to people. It's more fun to hear all those things mixed up together.
So since this did kind of sink without a trace, maybe it's worth just quickly saying, I mean, the guy grew facial hair.
I believe there was even a soul patch involved, which is always a bad sign.
Dropped like 30 pounds, which, you know, fine. But it didn't work.
No, it really didn't. The image, he put himself on the cover of the album with this kind of dyed, you know, choppy black hair and the soul patch. And, you know, it's just one of those images that I don't think he'll ever live down, despite being one of the best-selling singers of our era.
All right. So if T.I. and T.I.P. doesn't quite work, and if Garth Brooks and Chris Gaines was an absolute flop, it doesn't mean you can't do this successfully.
No.
Eminem has made a career out of the battle between, you know, Marshall Mathers, this well-meaning kid from a, you know, hard-scrabble
well-meaning
upbringing.
But messed up.
Yeah. And the quite shadier character known as Slim Shady.
Sure, and in a sense, there's a third character, which is Eminem the rapper. And you know, when he returned with the single "Without Me" a few years ago, it started with him saying, "I've created a monster because nobody wants to hear Marshall no more. They want Shady. I'm chopped liver." And so, you know, the idea of these characters getting jealous of each other's screen time was, you know, was interesting, and for a while worked really well. But on his last album, you know, he had a song where he was sort of talking about killing off Slim Shady as if he'd gotten sick of the character. So in a sense, the health of the character Slim Shady does sort of track a little bit with the health of Eminem's sales.
Let's hear a little bit from Eminem from the Marshall Mathers LP in The Way I Am.
That I need for the fire to burn, and it's burning, and I have returned, and I am whatever you say I am. If I wasn't, then why would I say I am? In the paper, the news, every day I am. Radio won't even play my jam, cause I am whatever you say I am. If I wasn't, then why would I say I am? In the paper, the news, every day I am. I don't know, it's just the way I am. I'm so sick and tired of being admired that I wish that I would just you'll get fired and drop from my label. Let's stop with the fables. I'm not gonna be able to top what my name is. And pigeonholed into some poppy sensation that caught me rotation at rock and roll stations. And I just do not got the patience to deal with these cocky Caucasians who think.
Eminem from the Marshall Mathers LP, for many years pitting the persona of Marshall Mathers against the alter ego Slim Shady.
And I think it's no coincidence that so many of his songs, The Way I Am, The Real Slim Shady, et cetera, My Name Is, dealt with this question of identity.
Identity,
dealt with,
yeah.
Who am I? Why are you buying my records, et cetera, et cetera.
That's Kelafasana, pop music critic of the New York Times. We're also joined now on the phone by Dr. Jeffrey Rutstein. He's a psychologist who specializes in dissociative identity disorder, DID. Jeffrey, we've been talking about examples in the music world of people adopting these different personas, T.I. with T.I.P., Tori Amos with her five characters, the Beatles with the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band, Garth Brooks and his rock alter ego. When you look at those artists, those are very different types of musicians, but they all seem to have something going on that they're all taking on these alter egos at the peak of their careers. Why is that? What's going on there?
Well, I don't know if we really can know for certain why people would do that, but I do think that, as you were just discussing a moment ago, the idea that there's a part of the self that's getting packaged for the public, and that part of the self can sort of take on a life of its own. Either just to be able to be more sellable or to present an image that's going to be stronger or more appealing. It also is going to be split off from other parts of the performer's life. I mean, no performer is 100% public with their entire private life.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that raises an issue that we've covered on occasion on the program in the past when we talked about, for example, the biography of Iggy Pop, you know, mm-hmm. or Joe Strummer, people who adopted onstage personas that then threatened to ruin the lives of, you know, the real people that these guys originally were, you know, their private lives.
Right, right. In some ways, it's almost like they have to decide, you know, do I become this image or do I still remain true to me?
All right, now I think it's important. I introduced you, Jeffrey, as being a psychologist who specializes in DID, dissociative identity disorder. It's important to say that we are not ascribing DID to any of these people. I mean, this is
right.
A different thing. We're talking about actually by choice taking on an alter ego.
Yes, I think by and large, the vast majority of these performers are doing something very deliberate and intentional, which is quite different than the manifestation of DID.
But you're hedging a little bit there. Do you Do you suspect that, that some artists are doing this because it is, in fact, a working out of some kind of, you know, crisis, some kind of genuine DID identity crisis?
I mean, we know that there's a lot of artists who have suffered significant trauma in their lives. Trauma is one of the major causative events that can create the condition of DID. And someone such as Tori Amos or the Indigo Girls or others speak quite eloquently and beautifully and powerfully of abusive experiences in their life. And that I'm sure that part of their working out is both through the lyrics and the songs themselves, but maybe enhanced, for example, on Tori Amos's most recent album. I think it's the Doll Posse album.
Yes, Dollhouse Posse.
Dollhouse
or American Posse. American Doll Posse.
Right, American Doll Posse, right.
Yeah.
And I think that while I don't think that these are by any means true alters for her, there may be some parallel with this experience, with her own experience of having have survived the kinds of harrowing events that she did.
Right. She's been very outspoken about early in her career being raped at gunpoint and actually was with us on Soundcheck not too long ago. And here's actually the way she explained the adopting of the five alter egos on her new record.
I think that it was first the music that showed me that there wasn't one theme running through it, one musical thread. Normally when I'm composing for a work, I can detect a theme. And I was hearing such varied styles that either I was making many records or I was making one record with many voices. And that was the beginning. That was the clue.
Tori Amos using no fewer than five voices on her latest record, American Doll Posse. We're speaking with Dr. Jeffrey Rutstein. He's a psychologist who specializes in DID, dissociative identity disorder. I'll ask you, Jeffrey, in a moment to explain what that really means, but Kella Fasane of the New York Times also with us. How does that work creatively when you've got five different characters to juggle?
Well, I think, especially on the Tori Amos record, which I like, which I think is one of her best albums in years, but I think that those five characters, in a sense, were more for her than for us. In other words, as someone who listens to that record, when I'm listening to the record, I'm not thinking, oh, this is the voice of this one, that's the voice of the other one. I think maybe those five characters are something that that she needed to do to help her make that record, but I think it's actually easy, and maybe even easier, to enjoy that record without thinking about the five characters.
She adopts the character of Clyde in the song Girl Disappearing. If you want, you can follow along with the liner notes and figure out who's singing what. But right. As you say, it's easy enough just to enjoy the song on its own. That is Tori Amos in the character of Clyde, one of five women whose personas she has created for the album American Doll Posse. And, you know, each of the five appears on the album cover. Each of the five has her own online blog. I mean, it's all very there's a lot to it. It's not just the adopting of different voices, which she also does. It's much deeper than that. We're speaking with Kalafasane of the New York Times and also with Dr. Jeffrey Rutstein, a psychologist who specializes in dissociative identity disorder. Jeffrey, you mentioned this album. It's clearly something you've been listening to. First of all, tell us what DID is and then how that might explain a little bit about the what Tori Amos is trying to do with this album.
Well, DID is the more recent term for what used to be called multiple personality disorder, or MPD. And it's a condition that usually occurs as a consequence of being severely and continuously abused as a child. The disorder appears first in childhood and can later manifest continuously throughout adulthood, too. And almost all people who have DID have had a very severe background of childhood abuse.
Mm-hmm.
When I was listening to your soundbite with the interview with Tori, and she was talking about how she was surprised hearing these five different themes going on. That's one way of possibly seeing that really five different aspects of herself or five different takes on things or five different voices were coming to her in the production of this collection of songs. And so instead of trying to unify it, she really allowed each of them to maybe take on a little bit more of a freestanding identity and sort of deliberately acted it out for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, this could reflect a kind of internal experience. And I'm not saying that she has DID.
Right.
But I'm saying that clearly she was sharing with you that she had the experience of having really five different themes occurring to her. And that was very different for her to notice in this production.
All right. Khalifa, Jeffrey's, been careful to separate the actual, the pathology of DID from what we're seeing as a deliberate move on the part of rappers like T.I. or songwriters like Tori Amos. Let's also distinguish between what's happening on those records from what Madonna and David Bowie have done throughout their careers, which is to, kind of create a persona, inhabit it, and then discard it and go on to the next one.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that something that Dr. Rutstein was saying earlier is true, which is that, in a sense, performing already is an alter ego. In other words, performers don't really have a choice. When you get on stage, you are inevitably kind of becoming something else. You know, we talked a little bit about how David Bowie, after those Ziggy Stardust tours in America, he was giving interviews in the Ziggy Stardust persona, and he started to feel himself kind of becoming Ziggy Stardust in a sense.
Which is ironic because there was no David Bowie. I mean, David
right.
Bowie was a construct
exactly.
of young David Jones.
Yeah, and I think certainly in nowadays, for hip hop is probably the best example where it's already an alter ego. As soon as you choose that rap name, it's already an alter ego. I think one of the differences is that often in hip hop, especially, a lot of these people find themselves in really serious situations as a result of that or related to that. So, when all of a sudden there's a shooting in a nightclub, or when a judge is trying to, when a lawyer is in court talking about your lyrics and how that might relate to your criminal record, now you have a further incentive to try and keep those things apart, even as fans get more and more hungry for those things to be together. And
yeah.
I think a lot of one good example, if you talk about alter egos, if you look at a group like the Wu-Tang Clan, they kind of turned that process of creating an alter ego, they kind of took it beyond its logical extreme. So Dennis Coles becomes Ghostface Killah, but then he becomes Tony Starks, who's Ghostface Killah's comic book alter ego, and then he becomes a boxer named Pretty Tony. And, these things, again, obviously they're not actual DID alter egos in that sense, but definitely playing with these identities in the sense that whatever you're putting out there, it's something that's halfway between a fake character and the real you.
What about Tupac at the end of his career and Machiavelli?
Exactly. I mean, Tupac is interesting because those two had merged so completely, and one of the saddest things about Tupac's murder, which is still unsolved, unsolved is that because it's unsolved, people have kind of been tempted to speculate. In other words, Tupac the character died on the same night that Tupac the person died, and it's kind of hard to tell those apart. And obviously what made it even spookier is he had recorded this album as Machiavelli, a slightly different character that was released after his death, which only made the mythology that much bigger.
Here is a little bit from that Machiavelli record by Tupac and the song Hail Mary.
I ain't a killer, but don't push me. Revenge is like the sweetest joy next to getting pissed off. Picture paragraphs unloaded, wise words being quoted. Beat the weakness in the rap game and sold it. Bow down, pray to God, hoping that he's listening. See a singing coming for me, my diamonds when they glistening. Now pay attention, rest me, please, Father. I'm a ghost, in the killing fields. Hail Mary, catch me if I go. Let's go deep inside the solitary mind of a madman. Screams in the dark, evil lurks, enemies see me flee. Activate my hate, let it break till I'm flaming. Set trip, empty out my clip, never stop to aim. Some say the game is all corrupted. It's stuck, niggas is lucky if we bust out the issue. Plus, mama told me never stop until I bust it. I with the world and they can't adjust. It's just a swell. Hail Mary, come with me. Hail Mary, book it, run quick, see. What do we have here now? Do you want to ride or die?
The late Tupac in his alter ego of Machiavelli and the song Hail Mary. And we've been talking about multiple personas among artists, ranging from rapper T.I. to singer-songwriter Tori Amos. And we've been speaking with Khalif Hassani of the New York Times and Dr. Jeffrey Rutstein, psychologist who specializes in DID, dissociative identity disorder. And Jeffrey, we all play different roles in our lives, professionally, you know, with our friends, with our family. Is the whole idea of a single persona a myth to begin with?
I think so. I think it's a fiction that, in some extent, we try to create. You know, my wife will be the first one to say that I'm a really good psychologist, but I'm not such a great husband, you know?
Well, very nice of you to state that on national radio. Is it just more extreme with musicians? Is that what we're talking about at the end of the day here?
I think so. I think that they're using it to their advantage, but they do it. They're doing something that we really all do. We separate our professional self from our personal self, and we are different parents as we would be siblings or friends, and how we are in public with strangers is different than how we are with people we're very comfortable with. And I think that for a performer, they're just doing what we're doing, but a more deliberate and
on
dramatic.
A bigger scale, yeah.
Yes.
All right, Dr. Jeffrey Rutstein and Khalif Hassani of the New York Times. Guys, thank you both for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.